It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
We're coming to you live from hell. It's about that hot in here.
It is really hot.
We get some laughter on the other side. It seems to be something of an air conditioning problem, I would say.
We paid our bill. I don't know.
Yeah, well, it's not that the building is on fire. I checked. So it's got to be the air conditioning. And hopefully by next week, we'll have it fixed. We were debating going down, just calling in from the parking lot on our cell phones because it's so nice outside.
At least there's a breeze.
At least there is. Anyway, we've complained too much. It's actually very nice, as always, to be here. Thanks to all the regulars that show up every week. It makes our jobs much more fun. And if you're new to the show, whether you just found it by accident or someone told you about it, try to stick around for the hour. We'll talk about all kinds of things that are right up to date and a few things that we have in our minds. But the important part is that if you want to talk about something, and it can be pretty much anything that has a little bit to do with money, and we know everybody's involved with money somehow, too much, too little, whatever. But anyway, just give us a phone call, 904-222-8255, and we will put you immediately on the air. We'll have a trivia question as usual, and there's so much to talk about. You know, the old Chinese curse says, a pox upon you, may you live in interesting times. We live in interesting times, and that was just Thursday and Friday in the market.
It was an interesting week. It was a short week because
it didn't seem like it.
No, it didn't. There was a little bit of volatility, which is unusual because most people were on vacation this week. Well, I don't know about most people, but there were a lot of people on vacation because of the short week and the holiday. And the market still saw a bit of a flip-flop and a big down day and a big up day. Although even the big down day came back about halfway.
Oh, yeah. By 4 o'clock on Thursday, I was feeling a lot better about the world.
Yeah, and there wasn't even a lot of economic data to move the market, but despite that, still saw the volatility, and we did end up in the black, though, for the week. And
not only that.
And set some new records.
Friday, all new records. Well, the three major indices all set records on Friday afternoon at 4, and you just can't have a much better week than that.
Well, I mean, they set records, but they were not by much.
No, it confirms that the bull market is alive and well.
Sure.
And we were caught wondering a little bit on Thursday because things were so ugly in the morning, but it soon subsided, and that was that.
Most of the gains this week were in large cap stocks. Mid and small caps actually sold off. In fact, the smaller market cap of the fund, the worse it performed this week. Mm-hmm. So, for example, SPY, the S&P 500 tracking fund, was up just under 0.7%. MDY, the mid-cap 400 fund, was down 1.7%. IWM, the small-cap Russell 2000 fund, was down 3.4%. And during that same period, IWC, the micro-cap ETF, was down 4.3%. So the smaller the cap, the worse the loss.
Turns on a dime this year, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Pretty clear trading action, just a one-week, not a trend, just an interesting note. There's definitely some oversold areas of the market in the mid and small cap space right now if you're looking for a relative bargain. So look around and see what you like. But after a week like that, being down 3-4%, there's usually some opportunities.
Yeah, and there are still some.
The disparities were also apparent in the S&P 500 by sector this week. Real estate was up 2.2%, utilities gained just over 2%, but on the other side, financials lost 2.75%, and energy was down even more at almost 4%. And despite that, energy is still up almost 40% for the year.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty crazy. We haven't seen a number like that on energy in many, many years. Yep. With the start of the third quarter, we're starting to see some earnings reports come in, although the pace won't really pick up until early August. The largest company to report this week was Levi's, which has a $1.3 billion market cap.
This is a great story, folks.
It's pretty funny.
It really is.
It was all over the news. You might have seen it.
Yeah.
$1.3 billion is still pretty small. I know it sounds like a big number, but when you're looking at $2 trillion companies out there, $1.3 is pretty small. Levi's did quite well. They beat on EPS and sales, and they also noted in their report that 35% of American consumers changed waist sizes during the pandemic. So what happens when you change waist sizes?
You buy new jeans. Gotta get new jeans.
So they didn't say it. Some went up and some went down. So it was probably a net of zero. But
yeah, but everybody's swapping out their sizes.
Next week, we'll see financials start reporting. Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Bank of America, Citi, and Wells, amongst others, will all report next week. So we'll see how that went in for their second quarters were. The bond market saw a bit of an increase this week thanks to falling yields. The 10-year Treasury started the week around 1.4%, dipped to 1.25% midweek, and rallied a bit on Friday, back up above 1.35%. So a lot of action in the 10-year Treasury yield right now.
Mortgage rates took another dip.
Yep, surprisingly. I mean, they're really low already.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. It's still a good time to do this, folks.
And I think that it will remain a good time to do this for a while. You have a supportive Fed. There's just not a lot of clear evidence for the market for rates to continue to rise right now. Although they're not at their all-time lows, but they're certainly hovering around near them.
It's a rounding error from an all-time low.
Commodities were a mixed bag this week. Gold gained over 1%. Silver dropped almost 1.5%. Oil lost about 1% as well, but the real loser was the commodities basket. The ETF that we use that tracks it, PDBC, was down over 2% on the week despite that gain in gold. So commodities have they've been a bit elevated lately, so it's not surprising to see a bit of a pullback.
The market thinks that inflation is a non-issue. The market is wrong.
Well, no, I think when you're looking at the price of things like wood and copper and things that are used in home price construction. In fact, Angela and Howard were talking about it, but they got way overheated, especially wood. Wood was out of control.
Yeah, Howard was giving all the stats on the wood, and we've talked about it on this show a few times too. But that, as we talk about, that's a self-correcting mechanism.
Yeah, it is.
How many people canceled their projects because wood's too darn high?
A lot.
Well, all of a sudden, demand dries up, prices fall, boom.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, in all the lumber mills and so on, they've been adding shifts and workers. So, of course, the supply goes up a little, the demand falls, and then it gets back to normal. Yep. Not everything's like that.
No, they were actually debating that on the price of homes, and yep. I tend to agree with them that the price of homes will probably be a bit stickier on the increase side than the price of commodities.
Yep. Hedging bets and making up for lost time and all that stuff.
Yeah, it was actually a really good analysis, I thought, of the commodities and home price market.
Absolutely.
We have a bit more. There was a few economic data points that came out that I'll touch on, but we'll do that after the break because we're coming up on one fairly soon.
Yeah. The other thing that happened in the big world of commodities and such, used car prices stopped rising, hesitated, and started falling.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. That's the first time in quite a while for the used car market. And, of course, that makes just nothing but common sense because they got too expensive.
Yeah, it's the same theory that we were just talking about with commodities.
As the chip industry is responding a little better than it used to, the new cars now are getting built and sold, which takes a lot of pressure off the used car market. So that's just all to be expected, and it's happening, so we know where we are in the cycle. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay a couple bills. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I'd like everybody to know that I put in a special request to the utility company during the break to get our air conditioning back on. They ignored me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well. One more quick thing. This is a little odd to me. I sort of get what they're saying, but we were talking about inflation right before the break. And in one of the articles that I pulled up this morning, as we wrote then, and we'll reiterate here, a slowdown in the rate of change is precisely what the transitory argument calls for. So if you slow down the rate of change, that's called a cut in D.C., right? So inflation is being cut, apparently. I think that's what they're getting at. I'm not buying the transitory thing, folks. Not yet, anyway. We'll see, won't we? All right, wrapping up the market.
Yeah, we had a couple of data points, economic data points I wanted to discuss. The ISM services and manufacturing reports were both published over the week, and they both showed the sectors are growing pretty fast, but not quite as fast as they did in May. I think both reports were considered misses, but they were really good misses. It wasn't disastrous news by any stretch. Yeah. The manufacturing report registered a 60.6, down from just over 61 in May. Much of the issue here is that suppliers continue to have problems meeting demands with material and labor shortages. The positive signs is that new orders are growing, customer inventories are low, and backlog of orders is high. So there, it's not that they couldn't have beat the number from last month. The demand is there. They can't because they can't find good people, and they are having trouble sourcing materials and inputs into their manufacturing processes. So I guess those are better problems to have than the lack of demand side. That means the economy is too strong for them. So not terrible news. On the services side, the report came in at 60.1, down from an all-time high of 64% in May. 64% probably unsustainable, hence the all-time high. But 60.1, a very strong number, means that it's still growing like crazy. And the services sector has now registered 13 consecutive months of growth after 2 months of contraction in April and May of last year. So,
and strong reports. A lot of the states have now dropped the extra $300 payment. The other half of them haven't. But you're going to see more people taking jobs. I read one preliminary report that after one state stopped them, applications went up or hiring went up 25%. So even though they say there's no direct correlation there, they're wrong.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense that there's not direct correlation there. But the JOLTS report also came out this week. That's Job Openings Labor Turnover Survey. Mm-hmm. And it showed that there were 9.2 million unfilled jobs in May of this year. 5.9 million people were hired and 5.3 million were let go during the month. Some of the month over month increases between April and May were pretty astounding. Those were in transportation, manufacturing, food services, and retail. So all the places you would expect they were. The jumps were, I mean, they were anywhere from 20 to 40%. Yeah. It's pretty incredible.
It is indeed. All right. We've been talking a lot lately about the telecommuting thing, and the trivia question relates directly to that. It seems that the employees are much more fond of telecommuting than are their employers.
Shocking.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So today's question, sponsored as usual by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And it says, between February of 2020 and February 2021, the working population in downtown Washington, D.C. shrunk a lot as the people picked up the remote work. By what percentage did downtown Washington, D.C. decline in the number of people working downtown during that 1 year? Adam took a really, really good guess at this, and if he'd been one closer, I would have given it to him.
Just
well, not to him. I would have given him credit, but he can't have a prize.
No.
That's how it goes.
No, that's how, that is
how it goes. So what percentage decline did we see over a year in downtown workers in Washington, D.C.? All right. What to hit next? I've got so much going on today. It's just unbelievable. One thing I wanted to mention, we've been talking about Peter Thiel's Roth IRA and all the various backlash everywhere. People just can't seem to wrap their brains around the fact that this guy got really fortunate with a really good investment that was totally legal. Now, some of you have probably heard me talk about a guy named Ed Slott. And Slott is probably the best resource in this country when it comes to IRAs. And in fact, his website is called IRA Help. And he has a newsletter that I've subscribed to for years and years and years, and now Adam does. And I read it cover to cover as soon as it comes in because it helps us keep up with all the little details. And Slott had an article online today, or not today, yesterday, I guess, about the one thing that people don't seem to comprehend about the Peter Thiel Roth IRA He said it was 100% legal. And that little thing right there tells you a lot, because so many people now are trying to change the rules because one guy did one legal thing and got very wealthy. He also pointed out that when he dies, the government's going to get a bigger percentage than if he lived. If they're at 40% now on death taxes, and I'll bet anything they bump it up to 45. So Peter Thiel's money is not protected forever, as many people seem to think. But then I found a little thing that I've read this to Adam, too, to see if he could make sense of it. And it says, in 2014, a report from the Government Accountability Office stated that Congress initially created IRAs to, quote, prevent the tax-favored accumulation of unduly large balances, unquote. Now, how could that be possible? Because if they created them to prevent unduly large balances, there'd have been a limit on it already. So what do they want to do? They want to go back and superimpose a limit now. It might be $3 million, $4 million. And anybody who has more than that has to start taking required minimum distributions out, which is just against everything American. It's not equal treatment under the law, and it's punishing people who didn't even break the law. So be careful when you hear about these people that are trying to react to the Peter Thiel Roth IRA problem, as they see it. It's not a problem, people. It's just the system working the way the system was designed to work. If you can start young and you put money in a Roth IRA and invest it well, I doubt many of you will hit $5 billion, but you can hit a big pile of money that way if you do it right. And that's just why the Roth IRA exists. It's why every IRA exists. People have to take care of themselves in the long run. And whatever they do to mess this up because of Peter Thiel is going to hurt every one of us in the long run. So resist, I say, resist. Another stupid thing. I'm trying to do the little ones before we get into anything real serious. PRO Act. People have heard us talk about it, not always by that name. Interrupt, because. Good morning, Marshall.
Good morning, gentlemen. I have just in your comments about Mr. Thiel.
Yeah.
So what if he takes all those dollars and starts a foundation for educating people on taxes and civics?
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Then there'll be no tax income
right, coming
to Uncle Sam.
That is absolutely true. And don't think that things like that aren't being done and considered. Wherever there's taxes to be saved, there's somebody there. And if you're the kind of person who likes to help other people, and most of us are when we've got leftover money, this could be a great thing. Imagine if we had an educated public, a financially literate public. Yeah, Adam's laughing.
More importantly, and I thought about this when it was first brought up about Lee Iacocca running for president.
Mm-hmm.
What if you had everybody in the government working for actually what they were supposed to be doing?
What did you smoke for breakfast?
Some good coffee, you know. But I'm just saying, from a standpoint of, okay, greed keeps coming in and interrupting people. You know, they may have a great idea when they got out of college, but greed takes over.
It does, and you know how people go to Washington, D.C. to change D.C., and they very quickly find out in their first day or so, I would say, that they're going to change to fit D.C., or they're not going to like being there. That's the problem.
Yeah. We have family up there. Yes, that is a big, big concern of ours.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. I'll continue listening.
All right, did you want to take a shot at the trivia? By how much did the working population in D.C. shrink? Pardon?
50%.
50%. That's a big number. It's not big enough, though.
Thank you, sir.
It's more than that. I appreciate the call, Marshall. Anytime, we love hearing from you. All right, we're going to... I'm running a little short here, but anyway... The PROACT is the one that wants to take everybody in the country who's an independent contractor and one by one switch them over to being an employee. And it caught my eye this week that now they're coming after financial advisors. If you folks do not understand the value of having an independent financial advisor, I'll show you some other articles about the satisfaction with people who deal with brokerages, and you won't like it. All right, we got to take another quick break, and we'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And again, we have a trivia question hanging out there. By what percentage did the number of people working in downtown Washington, D.C. decline in the period between February 20 and February of 21? And we know that 50% is too low. All right, I looked back this week at how did Van Wee Financial and the Van Wee Financial Hour approach the newly discovered coronavirus. And I was looking at what we wrote and did on air at the time. I thought I'd see how we did. So this is a little report card on ourselves. When we started out, it says, when market conditions become unusually disrupted, it warrants a communication. So we sent this one out because it was disrupting the market.
Yeah.
Pretty sharply.
That was the first time, I think, since we started in business that we had seen the automatic stops, pauses put in place. And it was ugly.
First time I remember. It was really ugly. And, of course, the thing that most people, I guess, thought of, they didn't always do it, but some did, is panic. Mm-hmm. So part of our purpose, both in the office and in the radio studio, is to try to prevent panic from making really bad decisions. So we said we won't try to sugarcoat it. Market futures are ugly, and it appears that the general market perception regarding coronavirus is world governments are neither handling the problem well, nor are they telling us the whole truth. Well, looked back at that, time has told its tale, and it was really accurate. The market did, as we expected, dropping more than 27%, and the governments did, as we suspected, not tell us the whole truth. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of it they didn't know, and I'll give them credit for that, because this was novel. It's not as novel as they wanted it to appear, if you ever paid attention to bird flu and SARS and all that stuff. But China has done a really, really bad job of informing the world as to what happened and how. And I think most people listening to me will agree that the chances of that virus coming from anywhere but that lab are infinitesimal. That's what I think. It had to come from that lab.
Yeah.
Who was it on TV that said, well, it's possible that it started from that lab a block away that bears the same name as the virus. I can't remember who that was, but it was one of the usual sort of liberal types, and it was extremely funny. Anyway, we carried on. Our concentration is always on the outlook for the business environment and corporate profits. Well, yes, and we also mentioned that some companies like Apple have warned about their supply chain. So in 16 months that we're past that now, we did see the disruption, particularly in the semiconductor arena. It's starting to hit a little bit, you get a little bit better, and sales are back to where they were, and there's a pent-up demand, so there's nothing particularly unique about that. I thought we were just right. Now, this was interesting also. With a product-oriented company, the result will be in delayed sales. If you're going to buy a car and you didn't buy it then, you're still going to buy a car.
That's what we're seeing right now.
Yep. Exactly, and that's what, in the interim, the cars you bought, because they were actually running because they weren't waiting for semiconductors, they went up to, what did I say, 34% or something like that, and then it started to drop back in June. But others, the service industries in particular, restaurants and bars, they incur actual lost sales. Because if you don't go to a restaurant tonight, you may go to that one Saturday, but you're not going to eat and drink twice as much next Saturday as you did this Saturday. So that's a lost sale. And there were some serious, serious problems in those industries. And you've seen a lot of restaurants close. the lingering effects include labor and so on. And we went on looking at the positive side. Americans have been finding out the hard way that diversification in supply chains is as important as diversification in portfolios. Well, what started to happen? Supply chains started to move back to this country big time. And this was under the Trump administration. Now, that process, I'd like to tell everybody, has just kept on going. Unfortunately, on the election eve, or election night, when some stuff was going really badly for this country, I thought you'd notice the next day that supply chains started to get resourced back to places like China. We do not learn real quickly. So what happened? We've got semiconductor problems, the vaccine problems. We've got all kinds of problems that were being solved in the prior administration, and it goes so far as our energy independence and so on. So, again, we pretty much nailed it. Next thing, changes had already begun when the coronavirus was announced, and that's all about the production and supply chains. And, yes, what happened? It was going fine, and then some other stuff happened. All right, then, looking ahead, what will happen in the equity market today, this being the day of the bad, bad news we were getting there, is anyone's guess. Likewise, how long it takes the market to attain a new high is unknowable. But we think that it will be reasonably fixed. We were a little bit wrong. It was almost unreasonably fixed how fast things came back.
It was a V.
When the prior administration was talking about the V-shaped recovery, they were getting laughed off the face of the earth. And quite frankly, I was a little skeptical. Mm-hmm. But when it happened, it really happened. And now look where we are with 9.2 or 3 million jobs available and nobody to take them. It's very interesting. Then our suggestion, this is where it hits the road here. Our suggestion is to ride this out even if a market correction occurs. After all, a correction is about a 10% drop in equities, and we have gains over the past 14 months far in excess of that. Well, we did have a correction, and we did have a recovery. And yesterday, all three major indices closed at records.
Yep.
We did okay.
Yeah, we did pretty good.
That gave us A minus, B plus.
If we're being candid about it, I think the only thing that we didn't really get even close to right was the vast overreaction of government and the vast power grab out of D.C. and in some of the state governments, and the willingness of people to accept those overreaches, and not just accept them, but start shaming others into accepting them as well. And that was not something we anticipated.
No, and I think the permanence of a lot of the job losses in the states that have been clinging on much too long to the shutdown theory, it's going to take some time to get some of those back. It shouldn't. They've been doing this far too long, and you can't underestimate, or is it you can't overestimate? Let's do it this way. You can't overestimate the trouble that was caused by places like California for just doing unreasonable things for unreasonably long.
And continuing today and with the full support of the majority of their population. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense at all. So I'm hoping that as this thing gets further and further in arrears and they're having more and more trouble keeping us sheeple doing what they want, now they're so desperate they're going into the variants and all that. It happens with every virus. So just do what you're doing, folks. Get vaccinated if you want to. Otherwise, just go out and do what you're doing, because it's not that bad anymore. We survived. I don't see any way that the market is going to price in anything awful on this front anymore. I think the market has understood that looking forward, things are just good.
Yeah, they do look pretty good. It's there are a lot of those services. It turns out there is some pent up, or they lost business during that time period, but now there is pent-up demand for those services. So people are going out to dinner more than they were before.
Yeah.
And so
that showed in the figures, too, last month. That a year and a half ago, the sales at bars and restaurants exceeded the sales at the grocery stores.
That's right.
That changed dramatically during the pandemic, and now it's back. So the people eating out and drinking out are actually exceeding the sales of grocery stores.
Right? And that last year when that happened, it was the first time ever. So this is the second time ever.
The trend is your friend, apparently. So if you're in that business and you've managed to keep your business alive, good for you, and things will only get better. All right, one more break. We'll be back right afterwards. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And a reminder again that our trivia question is still out there. By what percentage did workers decline in downtown D.C. between February 20 and February 21? And we know that 50% is too low. All right. You going to touch on something here?
Yeah. I wanted to do a little bit about Google search trends.
I love that. We've been following those for, 6 months or so? Maybe a year.
Bespoke Research does this. They send out this little thing about it, and they pull Google search trends for different terms, and they look at it typically over the last 5 or 10 years. These are all the last 5 years. Really interesting. A few months ago, stocks was a search term that hit a 5-year high, and not just by a little bit, by quite a wide margin. That was in the first quarter of this year when things were overheated, especially when it comes to sort of obscure things, meme stocks and GameStop and AMC theaters, the heavily shorted stocks that we talked about at length on this program. But right now they're back to that search trend is back to where it normally is at this time of year. Buy stocks is another one that had gone through the roof, and now it's back down to its normal levels. GameStop, again, right at its normal levels. It was, I mean, that chart, talk about a hockey stick style chart. That one went insane.
And I've been wrong so far. I predicted it would be back to its old level of about, $6 or something like that real soon. It's not doing that real quickly.
No, but I predicted that as well.
Yeah.
I'm surprised at its resiliency, actually.
Yeah.
Another one is for Bitcoin. That one's not quite back down to where its normal level, but it's just hovering above its normal level. It also went through the roof there for a while. NFT, non-fungible token, same thing, real big spike, and then now it's hovering just above its historic average. So all those things that were very trendy, and you could just kind of, you just got the feeling that they weren't here to stay, all back down to where they were before. On the other hand, there are some things now that are not related to that are caused by the pandemic that are hitting all-time highs or 5-year highs at least. One of those is hotels. That's sitting at a 5-year high, and it has been for several months now. It hit a recent low in January, and then from there it's been almost straight up. And the moral of that story is if you're planning on traveling anytime in the next 12 to 16 months, go ahead and start looking at it now because
are
booking quickly.
Yeah.
Vacation is another one sitting well above its 5-year high for this time of year. And so people are looking to get back on the road and go do things. And that is why you're seeing, I've experienced it personally, it's hard to find hotel rooms. It's hard to find Airbnbs for the time and the place that you want them. So if you're thinking about it, go ahead and get on that now. The other one that is really sticky is boats, surprisingly. I thought that would be a sort of flash in the pan, but it has not been. Google searches for new boats are at a 5-year high right now. And it's not just by a little bit, it's by quite a bit. And it even surpassed the 1 year ago pandemic high, which is pretty crazy. And then used boats are also sitting right at a tie with last year at the high. So the boating market has been insane. A lot of people complaining about prices, and again, that's probably going to be a self-correcting thing. The higher boat prices go, the less people that are going to buy them. So if you're in the market, looking to buy, you may want to give it a few more months, wait till the end of the summer, and you might see some prices come back down to earth.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with all of that. We're talking a little earlier about OPEC, the OPEC Plus, as they call them. Now, they're fighting each other, and nobody's really coming to much of a conclusion. But oil tried to take a sharp cut back this week, but it didn't last, and now it's headed back up again. We're going to have high gasoline and oil prices for a while. That probably doesn't hurt the boating industry as much as I might think it did.
Well, people with boats tend to have disposable income, so it won't hurt them as bad, but it may discourage some new buyers. Mm-hmm. It really, right now, what's hurting the boating industry more than the gas prices and boat prices is the storage prices. So if you don't live on the water,
I've heard that,
and you can't put it in your driveway, your options are really limited right now as to where to store it, and that could be that could discourage a lot of people from buying a boat.
So maybe there'll be a real boom in marina building.
That's possible, except that there isn't a lot of land available for that.
No, that's true, because waterfront land is expensive.
Yeah, there is one new development at Atlantic and the Intercoastal that is going to be a marina that they're developing right now. But I think those plans have been in place for a while. So,
If you're going to be a boater, I can think of no better place to live.
No, we have great boating all around Florida. But it is not cheap.
No. All right. You've heard us and Howard and Angela all talk about the bad guys in our business. And it's always interesting to me whether the bad guys, the crooks and shysters, whether they help us or hurt us. You know, do we look better by comparison, or does it give the industry a big black eye? Now, here's a recent one, and there's always a moral in it for the investor. And believe me, I'll get there. This fella, co-founder of a Florida financial firm, okay, recently died by suicide. Isn't that interesting? His name was Eric Holtz. He was 54, and he co-founded Seaman Holtz family of companies in Boca Raton. Now, for some reason, when you read about financial shenanigans in Florida, it is almost always in Boca Raton. Is it in the water or the air or something down there?
South Florida, it's a hub of financial crimes. It really is.
There is such a list that comes out, and not all of them in jail. I don't want you to get me wrong. It's somewhere between shysters, stupid people, snake oil salesmen, whatever you want to call them. But there's so many based in Boca. It's just weird. But this guy, he defrauded elderly investors. And those of you who've been listening to me for a long time, you know that what really pulls my chain is when people rip off older people.
Yeah,
it's
the lowest,
unforgivable thing I can imagine. And it's over a $1 billion industry every year, ripping off elderly people. But it's not 100% on the shysters. There are things you have to learn, rules of thumb to watch that'll help you. Well, this guy was using life insurance policy backed notes. You've ever heard a term like that before?
Nope.
Nor have I. The investment notes, so to speak, were, which the firm called Longevity Linked Assets. Okay. Again, no clue. Were described as collateralized by life insurance policies issued to third parties that promised to pay, quote, a substantial premium, unquote, upon the death of the insured, according to the class action. What did I just say?
I don't even know.
I don't either. I can't imagine. There's a rule of thumb in our little shop that says if you can't explain it to a 12-year-old in 5 minutes, it will not be in the portfolio, period. I can't explain this to a 40-something in an hour because I don't get it. I've read it and read it and read it. I don't get it. Well, guess what, folks? You couldn't see it on an independent third-party website. You had no idea where your money was, and now your money's gone. Now, I mentioned this fella died by suicide. Here's the comment by the firm, and there is no better wrap-up than this. Quote, there is no indication that Eric's tragic passing is in any way any way related to this filing.
What?
Yeah. I hate to laugh at any of this. I hate watching people get ripped off. I hate speaking poorly of the dead and all of that. But, folks, if you are working with an advisor and you cannot go to an independent website 24/7 and on your own call up your own money, see what's in there, and read about and understand exactly what's in there, then you are setting yourself up for a really tragic ending. And when I see this kind of thing where there were 100 investors and they're all over 65, it just takes me to the moon. Well, you know how things work in D.C. Everybody works for the big government and all that stuff. So when COVID hit and the whole telecommuting thing started, naturally Uncle Sam was right in the forefront. So the number of people working downtown in D.C. offices in 1 year dropped by 82%. Guess what's getting cheaper? Office space rent.
I bet.
And it's not just happening there, but it's really interesting there. And why is it? Well, it's partly because the employees absolutely love the home-based stuff, and I'm with them. All right, got to run. See you next week, same time. Thanks for listening. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.